You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2022 Tour de France FAM, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Stage 3, today Riné Pernet.
I'm sorry. it feels like such a good comeback after. I have to say it. It was a day yesterday, and losing Marta and crashing and have to come back and then I just loved how the team kept the fighting spirit, and yeah, we knew that today was a super good day, and if I had the legs, then I could try and go for the win and to actually do it and be a Tour de France stage winner. and in this jersey, oh my god, it just doesn't get better. Yeah,
can you explain your sprints? How strong were you to beat Marianne Vos?
Yeah, I don't think I realized it yet. but it was and I didn't come into like the last corner in the best position, but I just kept fighting. what a victory, man. And this is for the team. This is for my team. They did such a good job yesterday and they kept believing in me. So yeah, I love you guys.
What a win on what a year for Denmark.
Yeah, what a year for Denmark.
Huge congrats.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you just heard a rather breathless, tearful, slightly sweary interview there from Cecilie Uttrup-Ludwig, of course the winner of Stage 3 of the Tour de France FAM, here in Epinay. And I should say, it's rather lovely being in Epinay. I'm joined by Anne-Maria Rook, again, and a new butchering every day. Hello, Rook.
That was actually really good.
Oh, great. Yeah. I'm getting better. How are you enjoying being here in Epinay?
I like it. The champagne is good. People are friendly. What's more to like?
Well, yeah, we've got some great champagne here. I'm sorry. And Lizzie Banks, who's just joined us on our Zoom call.
Well, you know, I have rather flatter, slightly less yellow champagne, unfortunately.
Yes.
but, you know, I'm sipping it with you, so there with you in spirit.
Well, exactly. And it's beautiful surroundings here. We've got just the sunset, beautiful big stone brick buildings. Obviously, all of the champagne comes from here. This is the Champagne region. Rather grand buildings that all the champagne producers come from. I can actually hear the champagne already hitting my what I'm trying to say already, which is not a good sign. But well, should we find out? We know that Cecilie Uttrup-Ludwig obviously won the stage because we've already heard her emotional interview already. But Lizzie, do you want to roll on with the tale of the etap?
Well, Rose, let's do just that. The world was put to rights with Marianne Vos donning the yellow jersey for Stage 3 from Reims to Epinay for 133.6 kilometres of hilly terrain. Two notable non-starters this morning, Amanda Spratt of Bike Exchange had too much pain to continue, and Ali Wollaston of AG Insurance fractured her wrist, and many more were left licking their wounds in the run-up to what was a stage back-loaded with difficulty. Yesterday's corrections corner, it was Femke Marcus of Park Hotel Valkenburg wearing the polka dot jersey today, equal on points with her teammate Femke Gerritsen, who took maximum of 2 points on each of the three Category 4 climbs ahead of Canyon Schramm's Elise Shabby. A cagey peloton kept it tight until the first serious attack of the day from Elena Amielusik at 45 kilometres to go. An unusually late nature break for Annemiek van Vleuten had her team working at full pelt to bring her back to the bunch just as the race hit the finishing loop. With the ominously named Côte de Mutiny looming on the horizon, a stressed peloton was lined out into the tricky entry into the climb. Crashes on two consecutive corners took Rachel Nalen of Cofidis and Veronica Ewers of EF Tibco SVB out of contention. As the bunch raged up the 12% gradients, Amielusik was absorbed whilst teammate Nivea Doma had ground to make up after getting distanced before the start of the climb. Ashley Mormont-Passier stretched her legs, distancing Voss and Uttrup Ludwig, whilst Nivea Doma was still clawing her way back behind. Having made the front split, and critically distancing Voss, Vollering and Lippert hit the deck on a fast left-hander. Sylvia Persico, also in front, was now the virtual yellow jersey and was riding out of her skin to drive the group to the line. Behind, the chase was on. Uttrup Ludwig, Voss, Nivea Doma, Faulkner, Labou, Vollering, hanging just 10 seconds behind the leaders at 8 kilometres to go. The call from the radio of SD Works for Mormont-Passier not to ride brought the two groups back together within touching distance of the first bonus climb of the race. 3, 2, and 1 seconds were available atop the Mont Benon, but it was the back of the group where the real action was happening. An out-of-sorts Annemiek van Vleuten couldn't follow the pace and was 17 seconds down at the top of the climb. A monster ride from van Vleuten brought her back to the group just as they hit the Flamme Rouge, with Vollering leading out on the front. With 300 metres to go on the steep kick to the line, Nivea Doma launched early, Voss and Mormont-Passier glued to her wheel. Just as it looked set as a stage win for Voss, Uttrup Ludwig catapulted herself around the trio with 100 metres to go, flying past the yellow jersey and posting up with bike lengths to spare. From desperation to elation, the Danish champion flipped the fortunes of FDJ on yet another spectacular day at the Tour de France Femmes. Voss and Mormont-Passier crossed the line in second and third, with Voss retaining yellow, adding 6 bonus seconds to her overall lead. The white jersey passed to Julie De Wilder of Plantapura, Femke Heritzer secured the polka dot jersey, and Canyon SRAM retained their lead in the team competition, heading into what promises to be another thrilling stage tomorrow from Troyes to Bar-sur-Aube.
The cycling podcast at the 2022 Tour de France Femmes, powered by Super Sapiens. Energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Still guessing on fueling? Not sure what or when to eat and drink on rides that matter? Never again. Optimize your fueling strategy with real-time glucose data, actionable insights, and personalized analytics. We're here to help you achieve your performance goals. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success.
Thank you very much to Super Sapiens, title sponsors of the Cycling Podcast. Now, you'll have heard during our Tour de France coverage that they have their own podcast too. That's called the Super Sapiens Podcast, and that is presented by Zylon van Eyck and Dr. David Lippmann. Now, remember in the middle week, we heard some clips from Ashley Mormont-Passier, who of course came third on today's stage at the Tour de France Femmes. But they also have another episode that we're going to hear from where they spoke to Rachel Nalen, who is riding for Cofidis here at the Tour de France Femmes as well. So let's have a listen.
When you have a really, really high density of intensity and you want to put out a lot of high intensity efforts, then really focusing on the high carb fuel, starting to fuel earlier, and definitely having a high carb breakfast before the session. I've had a lot of learnings from Super Sapiens. It's been a fantastic journey so far, but I think that's probably the holy grail, is just understanding and having a grasp on how much you need to fuel. Like, you know, you think, oh yeah, I'm fueling high, but it's not until you see the impact of that on your glucose score that it really hits home, and that you can make those habitual changes.
Find out more about Super Sapiens' system of continuous glucose monitoring, which can help tailor your fueling and training for success. Go to supersapiens.com. Well, as we already know, Cecily Uttrup Ludwig was the stage 3 winner at the Tour de France Femmes, and she's massively a fan favourite, but actually not a rider that gets that many results. She's not a rider that wins an awful lot, but she really has the public's heart, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I mean, she's what I would call a total quote machine. When you know when you're going to interview Cecily, you know you're going to get some really emotional quotes, and the public loves that.
And what was it like in the press conference?
Oh, it was like a stand-up comedy show. It's phenomenal. The whole press room was laughing.
And why do you think that she has that effect on people? Because she kind of draws the viewership into cycling, but not by her results, but by, as you say, like, you know, the post race interviews that she does.
Yeah, she's emotional, she's boisterous, she's completely free with her expressions, and I think the people like to see that.
Now, Lizzie, obviously you've ridden alongside Cecily Uttrup Ludwig. tell us a little bit about her strengths as a rider.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's actually not surprising that she did so well on this climb today. Perhaps it's a little bit surprising that she could out Voss. But as we saw in Po back in 2019, it was quite a similar finish. It was a really punchy climb, but then with a little flat a bit afterwards. And she was third there in a really phenomenal finish. And again, the Giro dell'Emilia, which she won in 2020, that was a steep climb. But the way you win it is by having a really, really sharp kick. And I think I said this in the preview show. I don't think that Cecilia Utrecht-Ludwig is out and out the best steep climb climber, but I do think she is a brilliant punchy climber. And I think actually, because people look at her as a climber, sometimes her best characteristics are overlooked. You know, these kinds of stages, of course, back in 2019, we saw her on the podium at the Tour of Flanders as well, because she did an absolutely phenomenal attack on the cobbles, just came flying past the whole bunch with exactly the same sort of punch that we saw today. So I think looking ahead to tomorrow, she's going to be looking to capitalize on that as well. You know, it's a very kind of Strade Bianche type race, a race that's going to require punchy efforts. And that's exactly what suits her down to the ground.
But I mean, we don't normally consider the kind of punchy riders to be GC contenders, do we? So, do you think it's in a way a little mistake for her to be going for the GC, or do you think that she has the calibre in the high mountains anyway?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's a mistake, especially not now that Marta Cavalli is out of the picture, of course. It's a shame that Grace Brown lost so much time, because I actually think that although people don't look at Grace Brown and see her as a climber, she can climb phenomenally. She is definitely the best card that they have to play in the GC, so they will protect her and try to stop her losing time, and of course try to go for more stage wins. You know, she's got a good chance, and she's got a good chance of getting on the podium. We saw, you know, we'll talk about later how Annemiek was out of sorts, and you just don't know what's going to happen. You know, tomorrow you could have the three top favourites for the GC losing 5-10 minutes. We just don't know. So you've always got to keep... You've got to keep yourself up there. You've got to keeping within the time whenever you can, and just keeping the options open.
And Rook, you mentioned there, Lizzie, of course, about Marta Cavalli crashing out yesterday, and that kind of changing, I guess, FDJ's dynamic. But FDJ, they had a really bad day yesterday. How much of this is a vindication for them?
Oh, it's a complete vindication for them. Scylla was saying that, you know, that this win was for her, but mostly for the team, in that she just wanted to show that, you know, we fight back. And the whole team rallied behind her. They allowed a little bit of downtime last night. They're like, okay, this happened to us. Like, how do we feel about it? And then they rallied together and tackled today like a brand new day, and to great success.
And obviously that's a huge thing, Lizzie, as a pro rider yourself. How big is that to have the morale of a win, when especially when you've had such bad luck far in a race?
It's just the most important thing, I think. When there's a bad dynamic in the team, when there's a bad feeling, it brings everybody down. And these races are exhausting. You know, we've seen how so far these three stages have just been absolutely full gas. It's not like your average stage race. And again, tomorrow it's going to be the same. I don't think that the GC riders are going to get any respite until stage 5 or 6. So it will be four full gas, almost like one day stage races back to back. And that's exhausting. Plus you've got the transfers and all the other things that you've got to do around that. So then if you've got that positive mentality within the team, it just lifts everybody up, and it gives you that extra bit of energy that you really need to keep going. And it is such a mental game. At the end of the day, all of these riders, they're so close physiologically. Like, really everybody is just absolutely on a par. But if you've just got that 1% extra mental strength, or 5% if you've just had a stage win, that's an absolute game changer.
I have to say, I was so impressed in the way that Cecilia Utrecht-Ludwig went about that win. I mean, we were together, weren't we, at the finish, Rook? And I felt sure that it would be a day for Marianne Vos. I mean, she seemed to be coming up so fast. I mean, how impressive did you feel that Cecilia Utrecht-Ludwig's performance was to get this win today?
I mean, to be honest, I didn't even think she was in the running. She, like, came out of nowhere, and suddenly, you know, you see this red blur come by, and you're like, oh, I forgot she was in the mix. She, like, stayed hidden so well, and just went the way she came over the top. I mean, Yeah, she was the deserved winner today. And the finishing climb was actually a lot steeper than it may have looked on TV. I myself rode it this morning on my Brompton, and I was surprised how
everything's steep on a Brompton, though.
Absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, when I saw it, I knew immediately, like, this may not be a Marianne Vos win. I actually thought maybe, you know, Longo Borghini is more upper alley, and yeah, I think it's my bad for not counting on Ludwig to take the win.
Do you think that's a little bit because she, you know, she doesn't win an awful lot? Does that buy into that you're not looking to her for the win because, you know, she doesn't win an awful lot?
Yeah, that's definitely a factor for sure. Yeah,
because I mean, we're talking about her last win was actually at Vuelta a Burgos. Last year at Stage 3, that's her only other Women's World Tour win to date. What do you think is the difference, Lizzie, between, because you say, you know, everyone's very close physiologically. What is the difference between getting a lot of podiums, a lot of top fives that Cecilia Ludwig normally gets, to getting the win?
Yeah, I mean, it's a couple of things. It's about having that finishing blow, isn't it? And that's what Marianne Vos has in spades. She always has that finishing blow to really kind of that knockout punch. And it's also about having the team around you. And FEJ have just grown in strength very steadily from what they were, you know, 5 years ago. And each year they've added more and more strength. And so she has the people to protect her earlier in the race. And those bits of the race that you don't see, you know, the bits where the teammates are 20 minutes down, and maybe you look at the race and you say, well, what did they add to it? But actually they were critical because they were the people going back for bottles. They were the people getting the ice, keeping her hydrated, keeping her fed, keeping her out of the wind, keeping her safe. And every single time you save that tiny bit of energy, it all adds up to the finish. And Marianne Vos, you know, she will have her teammates around her always, of course. She's so savvy at saving energy. And now Cecilia Ludwig, she has those teammates, she has that team to help her. And now she's got this confidence for the win. From the win, I wouldn't be surprised if we see either another win or more podium placings from her, because I just think that the confidence from believing that you can do it enables you to do it again. And perhaps that confidence came from her winning the Danish national jersey just a few weeks ago. But it was interesting how she came in, because like you said, Rook, she was out of the helicopter shot. You couldn't see her. But actually what was so interesting is because Nivea Doma, she started sprinting at 300 meters to go, which on an uphill, on a steep uphill, is a long, long way. She drew out Vos and Mormon Passio. They were right on her wheel, but they had to put that really sharp effort in right at the bottom and then stay with her. So they used their one killer punch right at the bottom of the climb. Utrup Ludwig didn't really have a choice but to stay where she was, because she was kind of almost boxed in a little bit further back, and so she had to go at her own pace to claw her way back until she then unleashed her killer blow. It's like she lit the fuse on a cannonball and then just exploded straight out of it for the win. And Vos and Mormon Passio just couldn't respond.
Now, you talked there, Lizzie, about the team, FDJ. So shall we hear now actually from Cedric Batt, who's the DS at FDJ, and also Grace Brown, who's one of the key teammates at FDJ as well.
What was the feeling like in the team this morning before the stage? Were you all very motivated to go out there and turn things around?
Yes, of course. Before the stage, we have a good feeling. After the crash, we have a question with the shape of seal, with the body, because it's not easy when you crash, but it's a good day now, and it's amazing.
Everyone was so happy to see Cecily win today. Why was everyone so happy for her? What does she like to work with?
The other girls are happy because Cecily is a very strong leader, good leader, and the girls don't hesitate to work for seal. It's normal. So we are happy when the leader win, and today it's perfect.
How satisfying is this as a win for Cecily when she's been so close so many times?
Yes, of course the gap is important after the stage of yesterday, but step by step we can take a time, and the GC is not finished. For win may be difficult, but for the podium sure it's possible. So day after day we can win a lot of time.
And how does this rank among Cecily's wins? I mean, this has got to be the biggest win of her career.
Yeah, it's the best best win for Cecily, of course. It's the Tour de France, the first. She waited this since a long time. She win other race, of course, but I think this stage is the best. And maybe it's not the last.
Yesterday was, I think everyone knows that it was a really bad day for the team, but we saw today as an opportunity to turn things around and fight back and show our strength, and I think we nailed it, really. No better way to do that than winning the race.
What was the feeling this morning within the team? Was it one of motivation? What was the vibe?
Yeah, we sort of let ourselves have yesterday after the race to commiserate, and then today, yeah, I could feel a shift in the mood, and we were all really motivated to have a strong day on the bike, and we knew that it was a stage that we could do well on, particularly for Cecily on that finish, and she proved that we were right.
We saw you like whooping as you were coming down the hill. You're so happy for her. Why, like, what is a bit about Cecily as a rider that makes you all feel so happy when she wins?
Yeah, I think she's so open with her emotions, and she's, you know, a real character and leader on the team that we all buy into her, and we believe, you know, in her ability as a cyclist. And we feel when things are not good, and then she draws everyone in and shares the feeling of victory with us, which I think is a super good characteristic for a leader. Because now the whole team feels like we've won.
What was Cecily's mood yesterday after the stage?
She was understandably really disappointed, and it felt a bit unfair, you know, to have time on GC taken away because of a unfortunate crash. She's good at turning the emotions around as well. So she was upset, which is understandable, but she was fine. Yeah. We didn't all feel like we were in the depths of despair.
And how much did you have to change strategy as a team, losing Marta Cavalli?
For today, not a huge amount. Obviously, overall for the GC, we were going to have those two cards to play. And basically now it's just simplified things. We've got one GC leader. We don't have to... We don't have to complicate it with two, and we all know that we're looking after Cecily. It's a real pity that we've lost Marta and that card, and she's super upset to have left the race. But we've still got a really strong leader to ride for, and even though Cecily has lost time on GC, a minute can be gained as easily as it can be lost, so we'll see what the days bring.
And do you have any ambitions yourself this week? Will you be allowed to go for yourself?
Yeah, the team's always really good for me. Like, I generally have a bit of a white card if I have an opportunity, if I read the race and see that it's a good moment for me, then I can take it. Maybe tomorrow might show an opportunity for me, but we'll see. Like today, I thought, you know, if I made it over the climb with the lead, I could maybe do something, but throughout the race I felt like it wasn't a day for me, so I just went domestic mode. So it depends day to day.
Thanks, Grace.
Thanks so much,
Grace.
Congratulations.
We start the stage three in Reims, and it's a very important place for women cycling, actually, Reims, because in 1958, on Reims racetrack, the first women's world cycling title was awarded to Luxembourg's Elsie Jacobs. That's the first ever women's cycling world championship took place in Reims in 1958. So obviously, an important, you know, place in the history of women's cycling. It is also an important, you know, stronghold of women's cycling because it's also the homeland of Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, who was actually the first woman to win the world championships in three different categories of women's cycling, mountain bike, the road race, and track. Of course, where Reims is known above all for its cathedral, that's on the, obviously on the UNESCO World Heritage list, is one of the major cathedrals in France. And of course, Reims is also the capital of Champagne. And that's in Reims. And this stage is all going to be about Champagne. I mean, Champagne is a region in the first place. And Épernay, which is going to be the finish of the town, is also one of the most important Champagne towns in terms of all the Champagne houses, you know, having their headquarters there. So throughout today's stage, you know, the riders will be riding along vineyards, you know, seen in the distance little houses and, you know, very posh little castles with the name of, you know, very famous vineyards and champagne houses. So, well, obviously, you know, I'm sure that on the finish line, the winner will celebrate by, you know, opening a fine bottle of champagne. The funny thing about champagne is it's the most famous, you know, fizzy wine on the planet. But it actually, if the history is right, the man who imported the process of making champagne, or putting bubbles in white wine, it actually comes from Limoux. Limoux is also known for you know, a fizzy wine called Blanquette de Limoux, and Limoux had a monastery, and still has a monastery there, where a monk named Dom Pérignon spent a little bit of time there, and he discovered that strange white wine, Chardonnay mostly, that the monks there, you know, put bubbles in, and so he learned from those other monks in Limoux how you make you know, wine, you know, fizzy, and he took this this knowledge and this know-how to Reims and the Reims and the Champagne region, and made this part of France, well, famous worldwide for its wine. You know, you finish in Épernay. Épernay is really the Finnish town. I mean, the men's Tour de France, the Tour de France homme, has been there a couple of times. The last time in 2019, when Julien Alaphilippe won a stage there. And well, the cycling podcast has great memories of Épernay because we were lucky at the time when the Tour de France went there to be invited by Laurent Perrier to taste champagne on the house in the vineyards, and were invited to a dinner. I'm sure there was, at the time we recorded an episode of Friends of the Podcast about it. So great memories in Épernay. Actually, if you go to Épernay, it's also, you have to go to Avenue de Champagne, which is the main street, the main road, the main avenue, as the name implies, in Épernay. And it's supposed to be, it's been described by some as the richest avenue in the world, because Epernay's most famous, you know, street is home to 10 of the greatest champagne houses, De Castellane, Moëtin-Chandon, Mercier, Perrier-Jouët, Demoiselle, Comtesse Laframboise, Esterlin, De Venoche, Paul Roger, and all these houses have superb Renaissance or classical style buildings, but the richness, the wealth of the place in the cellars is underground, and apparently there are over 200 million bottles of champagne in the private cellars of these houses. So you imagine, given the price of champagne, how much you know, money, how much wealth lies in the underground of Avenue de Champagne in Épernay. Well, that's it for today. I think I'm going to serve myself a little cup of champagne to celebrate, as the I hope the riders will do. Well, let's talk tomorrow, Rose.
Well, thank you very much to Francois Thomazeau for giving us another little a French flavour of being here in Champagne country. Who knew that it was monks that started it all off? How are you enjoying your glass of champagne there, Brooke?
I'm enjoying it very much. Thank you. Thank you, monks.
Yeah. Thank you to the monks for sponsoring the cycling box. No, thank you very, not thank you to the monks. Well, thank you to the monks for this excellent glass of champagne. I'm enjoying it far too much, as you can probably hear. But
I'll be taking over the hosting of the podcast right now.
Little secret is that they had champagne in the press room as well, so we may have gotten a little head start.
Still haven't got a press proper press buffet, though, have we?
Yeah. No, we're still starving, but at least there's alcohol now. So
yeah, which is worse.
It totally is.
So a little bit more proofreading, a little bit more sub-editing might be needed to happen on this particular stage. But should we ever take a little look at the GC standings? Because that's kind of been we haven't mentioned that at all. And Marianne Vos is still in her yellow jersey, in her rightful place, shall we say. When we got Sylvia Persico in second, who's now 16 seconds back. Lizzie, what do you know about Sylvia Persico? I know you mentioned her yesterday, saying that she was just on the cusp of having a big, big breakthrough. But what do we know about
her? Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I almost wondered if today, watching the coverage, if today would be that day when she was in virtual yellow by about 10 seconds, because she had 20 seconds on the group of Voss, and they were absolutely hammering it at the front. And it, you know, it would have been such momentous occasion for her to suddenly be catapulted into the yellow jersey. But yeah, I mean, she's a rider that's just been getting better and better over the last 5 years. She came into my field of vision last year, I would say. I was noticing her results, and then of course she was third at the Cyclocross World Championships this January over in the US, and I think that was when people really started to sit up and notice her. She had a really good performance in the Giro this year, and well, I mean, so far her performance in the Tour has been absolutely phenomenal. But I mean, she's from Valcar Travel and Service, which is a criminally underrated team, I think, you know, often kind of overlooked, but, you know, they were the birthplace of Elisa Balsamo, amazing sprinter Chiara Consonni. They've you know, curated this talent in Sylvia Persico, and they're such a good development team. And yeah, they've just developed so many brilliant riders, brilliant Italian riders over the years.
Now, what we know about Valcar, normally we actually, well, I always think of them as a sprinting team. They normally develop all of the best Italian sprinters, like you said there, Lizzie, Elisa Balsamo being one of them. But they, you know, they're very much resolutely a development team. And I'm aware that, you know, that there have been rumours that they're in a bit of trouble. You know, they might not continue on to next year. I mean, that's kind of a problem for cycling, isn't it? If it can't support its development teams and development riders.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, this is a perfect example of a, you know, a kind of like a very much underrated and a quiet team, but it's a very important feeder team. It feeds talent into the higher ranks of the World Tour, and I think these teams, continental teams, they're absolutely crucial for the growth of the sport. And I really wish that sponsors would see the value that they bring to the sport.
I mean, it is kind of a problem that is something that we discuss quite regularly. I remember when Lorena Wiebes was moving from Park Hotel Valkenburg, and Park Hotel Valkenburg is another example of a team that produces a lot of riders, produced Debbie Vollering, for example, and then allows them to go on to bigger teams. But we had Lorena Wiebes leaving them, cutting off her contract to go to Team DSM, and now we heard that she's going to SD Works. What could cycling do to support these kind of development teams?
I mean, critically, they need funding, right? And what the nice thing is about a development team is that you can often come as a sponsor, you can come in at perhaps a lower rate or a lower cost than you could with, you know, SD Works or something like that. And it's a great way to get involved, to like see what it's all about, and see if you can get your money's worth, and without it being a massive paycheck. I also think there's just so much value to them, and it's also a way to create loyalty early on to not just the brand, but just like, you know, introduce people into the into the World Tour and into the program, and it would be really lovely to see some of these riders that have succeeded from these programs to give back, you know, come back as a DS, come back as a coach, and like, you know, build sport up from the ground.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what we've seen with Yolande Dorr, of course. You know, she was a rider for SD Works. She was, you know, one of the best sprinters in the world, and she's now gone over to the AG Insurance Next G team to go and be a DS there. And she's been, you know, she's been the DS for Ali Williston, who was actually one of my picks in the preview, and unfortunately crashed out with a fractured wrist. I think I must have cursed some of the riders. Marta Cavalli, Simone Boillard.
I'm very worried. I'm just every day I'm just looking at Marianna Vos and I'm like, please not Marianna. Please be saved from Lizzie's curse, please.
I know, I'm so sorry. But no, you know, I think that's become so much more common. And we've also seen Julia Sook come back. She was a rider at DSM, of course, and now she's a DS at L'Ecole Wahoo. And I know from speaking to the riders there that she's added so much value to the team as a DS who has recent experience as a female professional cyclist. So it is happening, like you say, Rook. And, you know, hopefully examples like Yolene and Julia Sook will you know, inspire other women who are retiring to go into those roles, because I think it's really, really important.
Yeah, it'll be amazing to see what Sylvia Persico can continue to do at this Tour de France Femme and hopefully raise the profile of Valcar even further. But a very familiar name in third place, and that is Kasia Niewiadoma, who is on the same time as Sylvia Persico, in fact. But something that I think was missed by the TV cameras was that Kasia actually, despite coming in sixth, she actually crashed Lizzie, didn't she? Not that far from the finish.
Yeah, so she was having an interview after the finish and she said, well, you know, I had a crash, but it wasn't seen because there was so much chaos going on in the run into the Côte de Mutiny. And there were two crashes that were kind of caught by the helicopter cam, but the focus was on the front of the bunch. And you could see that she wasn't there. She was sort of, there was the front bunch, a gap, another group, and then a gap to her group. But I think we're going to hear from Elise Chabé now to tell us what happened out on the road.
We wanted to have an aggressive race, and that's what we had. It was quite hard from the beginning, and we were present pretty much all the time. And unfortunately, Kasia crashed just before the biggest climb, and I was not sure if I had to wait for her or not, and I waited a bit, and then Tiff also gave her a bike, and then she could jump back on the group. I couldn't, unfortunately, to help her, but she was super strong to go back. She did a huge effort for that, and at the end she missed a bit for the victory, but I think we have to keep the positive and just to remember that she did a huge effort to come back, and we saved the time for the GC, so it's really nice. And tomorrow I think is another aggressive stage, and we will really go for it and see what's happening, we also try to enjoy as much as possible every stage, because the atmosphere is really, really amazing. And I think it's really cool to be here. So hope it's okay, and have a nice day. Ciao.
Well, Niewiadoma did an amazing job to claw her way back to the front. And of course, we saw her really fighting for those bonus seconds on the bonus climb, just 4K from the end of the race. And she took 2 seconds there. But I do wonder, Rose, if she went too deep on that climb, and that kind of, you know, took the edge off in the finish for her.
Yeah, I did wonder. Well, Rook, you were with me when we were watching that the bonus climb that comes just before the finish. And we were watching it, and Elisa Longo-Borghini was going for it, and Kasia Niewiadoma, and they seemed to be putting in a really hard effort for that. And so I said, how many bonus seconds is this? And someone said, oh, it's 10, 6 and 4. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. And then it turns out 3, 2 and 1 second. So if you came first, you got 3 seconds. Mm. Second, you came 2 seconds. Third, you got 1 second. To me, it didn't seem worth it to put in all of that effort. Rook, what was your view on it?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, if it had been 10 seconds, absolutely, go for it. But especially knowing that these mountains are looming, a second, 2 seconds, it's just 3 seconds, it's just not worth it, I don't think. Especially given, like, what we saw with Neodoma. Like, you burn a match and then you can't deliver when it really matters.
But I think with Neodoma, you know, we saw Voss getting dropped on the Cote de Mutiny just before, and I think she would have probably been thinking, okay, not only if I go over this can I get bonus seconds on Persico and Voss, but if I can drop them both and go to the finish, then I'll take the yellow jersey. So, you know, if it had all worked out and she'd have got the yellow jersey by 1 second, we'd have been saying, oh, isn't Neodoma a genius? And now we're saying, well, you know, was it really, really worth it? So, it, you know, everything can change in a second's breath. But it did feel a little bit like she was going a bit too deep. And I could see Voss behind just kind of biding her time, thinking, no, you know, I'm going to use this effort to the finish. And, you know, she nearly got it, but Ursula Ludwig just came around her at the end.
I mean, I guess the difference between 3, 2, and 1, it's only 1 second each. But if you could get 3 seconds on a rival, then it might be worth the effort. You know, if we consider that at the finish of the race, Ludwig got 2 seconds on the rest, and then a group then got 4 seconds advantage again on Mavi Garcia. So, you know, I guess when you know that there's these huge mountains looming, then it all becomes a little trivial. If it was a race like the Women's Tour, for example, where often the whole GC comes down to a matter of a couple of seconds, then it seems it does seem more reasonable. But Neodoma did a fantastic job, as we said, of getting back and getting herself back into contention so soon after that crash. But what do we make of you mentioned in the tale of the ETAP, Lizzie, about Annemiek van Vleuten, because obviously we always see her as totally indomitable, you know, can't be beaten rook. But we saw a little sign of weakness, didn't we, today?
Yeah, I mean, even after stage two, everyone was like, "Oh, we didn't see Annemiek today. Interesting." And then we're like, "Oh, she lost, you know, just under a minute or 30 seconds or something." And it's no big deal. The mountains are coming, no big deal. Then today, you know, we see her getting dropped, like, or at the very least getting distance. And that is something we don't see very often. We see a rise coming and Annemiek goes to the front and she's the one that's leading out the climb. And at that moment, I think most of us were like, oh, there must be something wrong with her. She's not looking well. She's not climbing the way she usually does. And of course, now we all know that she has a stomach bug and she's pushing through it. She's very confident that it's just one of those things that cures after a couple days. But I think for a few days there, we were all wondering what's happening with our outright favorite.
Well, I mean, what's amazing is that despite, you know, having an ailment, that she can still perform to a level where she is still among the very, very top contenders. Although she did, she lost 20 seconds today. Actually,
yeah, I was going to say, Rose, it was her teammate Emma Norsgaard's birthday today, and my husband went out for a ride in a Danish jersey donated to us by Emma Norsgaard today in celebration of Cecilia Uttrup Ludwig's stage win. And I messaged Emma saying happy birthday, and I said, you know, Annemiek was just phenomenal to do that. And she said, yeah, she's made of something different. You know, and that's her teammate. So she couldn't believe it either. So everybody thinks that that Annemiek is just something else. And I think anybody who's had that kind of stomach bug where you just cannot stomach anything, and she clearly had to stop for a different kind of nature break today in a critical part of the race.
She did indeed, yeah.
You know, and you know, going through that and coming back to that front group, you know, yes, she got just gapped a tiny bit, but she still got back to the front group and she lost 20 seconds, you know? It's nothing. I think it's really phenomenal to have pushed through that. And it does sound like she's getting through it. She will pay the price for a few days, but if she can get through tomorrow, have a couple of quiet days on stage 5 and 6, just keep eating, keep, you know, topping up her energy levels, then I really hope we can see her as a contender on stage 7 and 8, because the race needs her. The race needs her in the race.
Absolutely. And like, if this is her being so very sick, I mean, that should be a message for the rest of the peloton.
Yeah, watch out.
Yeah, yeah. It's very ominous, isn't it? Well, let's hear from Annemiek van Vleuten now.
Annemiek, you weren't feeling so good these past couple of days, I understand. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, yesterday I played quite some poker because no one asked me about it. Today it was quite obvious I couldn't play poker anymore because with the last two climbs it was quite obvious that I'm not the old one. Now I got sick 2 hours after the finish in the first stage. Like a stomach problem. And usually it comes fast, goes fast away. But yesterday I could not eat, could not drink. This morning I had already breakfast and I felt actually already super optimistic and felt like ready to go. But yeah, then you feel like you were quite sick for 24 hours. So today I paid a basic price for that. But I think I was already 100,000 times better than yesterday. So yesterday I felt like super shit. So only to lose yesterday, so I'm a little bit of time was already, was good.
Okay, obviously tomorrow is quite a key stage with the gravel. What's your feeling ahead of that stage?
Take it day by day, and the first I finish and take care of myself today. But I've seen it, so I don't know. I saw it after the Amsterdam Gold Race, and then it was not so hard gravel. Yeah, I won two times Strade Bianche, so I'm just not so keen to have gravel in stage racing. The bad luck factor, the factor, that's the only thing that was not really attracting me.
That was Annemiek van Vleuten, who's currently sitting ninth on GC at 1 minute 14 back. I was kind of surprised, actually, though, when Annemiek van Vleuten was dropped on a climb, to not see that the rest of the group really, really pushed on. I mean, that did surprise me somewhat. Did it surprise you, Rook?
Absolutely. I don't know who I was standing with, but I was just kind of just yelling at the screen, like, what are you doing? Like, don't sit up. Like, go. This is your moment. If there was ever a moment to, like, put a little bit of time in the GC, knowing what's looming ahead, that was the moment. And I guess everyone was just preparing for the finale because, yeah, they let the whole group come back together, and that included Annemiek. And I don't know, taking Annemiek up to a climb with you is never a good idea.
Well, I know, especially when you have riders like Kasia Niewiadoma in that group, you know, whose whole tactic to do well on GC would be to take as many little points, little seconds that she can in these earlier stages, wouldn't it be, Lizzie?
But it's the Voss problem, isn't it? You know, they look around the group and they think, like, oh, shall we work? And they go, well, Voss is here, and, you know, if she's not going to work, then she's just going to win. And, okay, well, maybe they were wrong. Cecilia Trip-Ludwig actually had the best legs in the end. But the problem is, when you've got somebody there who's such a clear winner, there's no incentive to work, because if they're not going to do their share, or if they even do their share but they're still going to win, then, well, you know, what's the point? You know, what's the point of expending any more energy? You will just want to try and spend as little energy as possible.
But is that short-sighted, knowing, you know, that this is
but
a long
cycling
race?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know, when you've done 131 kilometers and you're pretty much going blind because of the effort, then yeah, you're pretty short-sighted. That's just how it is, you know? I think sometimes from an onlooker's point of view, it's easy to forget how absolutely exhausted these riders are, that they, you know, so much so that they're going cross-eyed, and it's so easy to sit watching.
That's when you have someone encouraging,
going,
like
Rook,
being like, come on, get on with it, what are you doing, for sure.
There's a reason I'm here and I'm not in someone else's ear.
Well, one person who was pushing on was Demi Vollering, who is another of the GC favourites. She seemed to, when she came to the front of the group, she really pushed on, but then crashed on that corner, and Liana Lippert also crashed at the same time, just kind of slid out, managed to get back on her bike, managed to get back to that group phenomenally. But yeah, let's hear from Demi Vollering, who also adds a little interesting view on Annemiek van Vleuten.
Our plan was to try something on that first climb in the lap, how we did it now, and then see what was, how the situation was going on top. If Lotte was still there, then yeah, then we should go for Lotte in the final. If not, and we were at the small group, then we would ride to the finish for the GC, Ashley and me. So yeah, that was the plan, and I think in the end it was still good. It was just a bit disappointment that I crashed there. I mean, otherwise maybe I was, if I didn't need to put so much energy in the chase, then maybe we could even do more today.
Yeah, now 3 days on the way on the Tour de France. It's a different race, like all other races. We can conclude that after 3 days.
Yes, it is every day full gas. And you can lose it every day. You can win it every day. So you cannot fall asleep in the races here. You need to stay really, yeah, really focused everywhere, from beginning to end.
Did you feel like SD Works were the kind of motivating factor in that little group that you were leading? Did you feel like the other teams were as willing to pull as hard as SD Works at that point?
I don't know. I mean, it was I was first chasing back, so yeah, then we were working all together. I mean, Kasia was also really motivated to come back, and yeah, when we come back, it felt a bit down the speed, but I think yeah, then on the climb, everybody was there again and really focused, and on the final again.
Last thing, what did you think when Annemiek was dropped after the last climb? Did you see that actually?
No, I heard it in my radio, so yeah, then I thought, okay, maybe because of the downhills, because yeah, we saw that in Giro also already, that she was not so good in the downhills and that she was really scared, so I thought maybe that's why she was dropped, but I don't know.
Science in Sport is supporting the cycling podcast at the 2022 Tour de France FAM. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to our sponsors, Science in Sport, for their ongoing support of the cycling podcast. Now, if you're looking for sports nutrition, whether that be for energy, hydration, recovery, or vitamins and supplements, then head to scienceinsport.com. And if you want 25% off your products there, and why the hell not, then don't forget to use the code SISCP25. Well, we're only three stages into the Tour de France FAM, but it already feels like an elevated event, an event that's catching the attention of the public, the imagination of the public. And I think that was confirmed last night, wasn't it, when First Lady Jill Biden actually tweeted her support for the riders at the Tour de France FAM. And she picked out Lily Williams, who rides for Human Powered Health. Let's hear from her. Lily, you got mentioned by First Lady Jill Biden yesterday on Twitter. What was it like when you saw that?
It's pretty wild. It's nice to see that people who aren't in the general realm of cycling fans are paying attention to what's happening.
And she actually mentioned you specifically by name. Have you come across the First Lady before? Have you met her at a reception? Or?
No, I think it's just a testament to how well the team has shared our Team Empowered Health mission prior to this event and gotten great exposure for us. And then, you know, of course, being one of just a handful of Americans racing here, it's great to see that people in the U.S. are noticing.
What have the other American riders said to you? Because you're not the only, as you said, you're definitely not the only American here.
Yeah, no, I haven't talked to anyone specifically about it, but I think everyone's received their own sort of shout outs from people important. So we're all just happy to be here regardless of what's happening, you know.
And the Bidens are big bike fans themselves, aren't they?
Yeah, from what I've seen. Maybe we can give our president a lesson on staying clipped in, but we've all fallen off early in our cycling careers, so that's not that unusual.
And how much of a testament is it to, you know, the size of this event, the fact that, you know, the First Lady would tweet about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. I think people recognize the name of the Tour de France more than almost any other cycling event. I mean, I've certainly received attention during the Olympics as well, but this is a little bit different.
Now, that was Lily Williams of Human Powered Health, and I know that Lily has been doing an awful lot of press around her appearance here at the Tour de France, but what do we know about Lily?
Yeah, well, Lily is an interesting rider, both on the road and the track. Came to the sport quite late and is obviously doing quite well for herself. She also comes from an athletic family. Her mom competed in the 1980 Olympics as a speed skater. And her mom was pretty active on the bike as well, raced here and there. And they were big Tour de France fans growing up. Lily said she watched the Tour de France pretty much every summer, although she mostly watched for the cultural and scenic segments of the tour.
She's not getting much of it. To be honest, she's not sitting here in Epernay drinking champagne. She'll be very disappointed, I should imagine.
Yeah, she'll be missing the real-life cultural and scenic experience, but hopefully she can see something while she's out there on her bike.
And Lizzie, you know Lily a bit as well from living with her in the US.
Yeah, I lived just close to her when I was in Asheville in 2018 with United Healthcare. And yeah, she's great. She's such a character. And she actually used to be a runner, a really high-level runner, and came over to cycling when she had an injury, like so many runners do. And yeah, then she had a big win in the US, and then she got selected for the US track team and, of course, went to Tokyo. So yeah, it's great to see her out on the road now. And I hope she's going to kind of ignite some of the breakaways later on in the race.
Well, now that she knows that the First Lady of the US is watching...
Is watching, yeah, she better.
then, she's got to do something. But, I mean, we've got plenty more opportunities for some very exciting racing, don't we? I mean, tomorrow is a stage that I'm particularly excited about, the gravel stage.
Yes, I am so excited. I can't wait. I think this is an interesting stage. I think most riders don't care for it. They think that adding this element of bad luck to the tour is unnecessary. It's not fun. It's unfair, perhaps. And that's because anything can happen, right? You can flat, you can have a mechanical. Things that are out of your control will happen on this stage, and that's probably the thing that cyclists hate the most.
But, I mean, that's just cycling, isn't it? Things happening that are out of your control, really.
Yeah,
can
but,
you imagine,
you know,
being... being Annemiek van Vleuten and having a few days of stomach bug and then having to go onto this gravel, which she always says, you know, she hates it when it's such an element of bad luck. So poor Annemiek, she's having a pretty rough tour so far.
Annemiek actually told me that she's not too worried about tomorrow. She has recce'd the course. She knows it well. She's like ridden on gravel before, and she feels pretty confident that not only will she survive tomorrow's tour, she will also have kicked the bug by then.
Gosh, that's very ominous for everyone else. But, I mean, we have got no reason to doubt that Annemiek will do well. Although, you know, she has said before that she doesn't like the idea of having gravel stages in races. She does very well in that kind of stage. She's obviously a Strade Bianche champion. And in that Giro Rosa stage two, a few years ago, she got a huge lead there. But, Lizzie, you know, who else are your picks for this gravelly stage, not necessarily to make time on GC, but just, you know, as a stage win in itself?
Well, I think Trek will be really looking to capitalize on this stage. They are really going with an aggressive strategy for the whole race. We've seen that already, and I really think we're going to see it again tomorrow. They've got a very strong team, you know, with, of course, Audrey Cordon-Rigaud, Ellen van Dijk, Leah Thomas supporting Elisa Longaborghini, as well as world champion Elisa Balsamo, of course. And we've got nearly 13 kilometres of gravel tomorrow, with the last sector coming only 17 kilometres before the end. So that's going to be really, really critical, because if something happens in that sector, there is no time to rectify anything before the finish. And in addition to that, Rose, we've got this bonus climb, this 3-2-1 bonus climb at 9 kilometres to go. So
we love the bonus climb, don't we?
We do love the bonus climbs. And it's really spicy, you know. You've got 1,500 metres of ascent in the race, and that's kind of backloaded as well. So we start off flat, and then it just gets harder and harder and harder. And I think, you know, like you said, Rook, yesterday, you said we were going to see minutes difference today. And although we saw most of the protagonists at the front, the next group was minutes back, and I think it's going to be amplified tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, tomorrow, I'm not hoping for the carnage that we saw in the men's Tour de France in Stage 5, but there's going to be some upsets, absolutely.
God, it's all to play for still, isn't it? It's so exciting. Well, let me bid you adieu. Lizzie, thank you for your company.
Au revoir, Rose. Au revoir, Rook.
Au revoir.
Someone's been doing a gravel course.
I'm sorry, Francois. Yeah, I tried to pronounce Ram, but I just couldn't do it.
Thank you, Rook. We should actually say, now that you do have a minor in French cinema, don't you?
Yeah, that means I can't speak it, but I love watching French movies.
So you should give us kind of a more abstract goodbye from you.
You know, there's no like video to this, so you can't really see, you know, the noir cinema.
Oh, it's all going off. It's all going off here. And I'm very pleased to be able to leave our listeners with a Tour de Buffalo. It can't be said enough how much Richard Moore supported women's cycling, how much he really was a pioneer in the field of covering it, giving it the respect it deserved. And he would have absolutely loved to have been here, loved to have been around for this inaugural Tour de France fam. So I'm leaving you with him at La Course in 2018, which was really, you know, kind of the race that set Cecilie Uttrup-Ludwig on her trajectory as well. That was a huge battle between Anna van der Breggen and Annemiek van Vleuten. Let's leave you with that.
The Tour du Buffalo, remembering Richard Moore.
Look at that.
Annemiek van Vleuten in the green helmet, bobbing left and right. Come she on. Is giving this her everything. Come this on. Is coming down to a sprint what finish. A van Vleuten taking it. Holy moly.
Well rescued. Well rescued.
Phenomenal.
What a finish. What a finish. We were all kind of set ready to go and speak to Anna.
Interesting times to be a Dutch female cyclist, wow. Isn't it? Great. Here's Annemiek van Vleuten. Might have caught a bit of Annemiek van Vleuten there. She's off to... I thought she was going to commiserate with Anna van der Breggen, but none of that. She's off.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.